from 90.7 WFAE. This is Newsworthy for Thursday, December 11th, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. The Charlotte Area Transit System released more information Wednesday about the stabbing of a man on the Blue Line last Friday. Kenneth Lee has more on the second high-profile stabbing on the light rail since August.
Interim CAT CEO Brent Cagle shared new details about safety on the city's light rail system. CAT says it exceeded its goal last month with more than 900 hours of weekly CMPD coverage. But officials also said that there was no officer on the train when one passenger was stabbed and critically wounded. The suspect, Oscar Solorzano Garcia, is also presumed to not have had a ticket. The agency says it's continuing with its transit security and public safety plan, which calls for more fare enforcement and a stronger security presence on trains. Cagle also said CATS hopes to create a dedicated transit police force in the future. He added it would take more than 10,000 hours and 256 officers a day to staff every Blue Line train around the clock. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
New data shows Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools enrollment in the current fiscal year has dropped to its lowest point since 2012. But it wasn't just CMS that saw a decline. James Farrell reports.
New state data shows there were 139,476 students enrolled at CMS, a 1.7% decline from last year. Excluding 2020, when the pandemic brought dramatic public school enrollment declines nationwide, it's the largest single-year decrease in CMS enrollment since at least 2004. And it wasn't just CMS. Total statewide enrollment at traditional public schools declined by about 1.8%, again the largest single-year drop since 2004, excluding 2020. Multiple factors are affecting public school enrollment in North Carolina, including stagnant birth rates and expanding school choice. Enrollment at independent public schools, which includes charter schools, increased by about 3%. The state has also expanded vouchers for private schools. James Farrell, WFAE News.
Buried asbestos is an issue in Davidson again as the State Department of Transportation begins building a road connection to relieve congestion on Main Street. David Borax has this report.
Contractors have removed asbestos-contaminated soil across Davidson's West Side neighborhood in recent years. It comes from the former Carolina Asbestos Factory, which turned the cancer-causing mineral into insulation, brake linings, and building shingles from 1930 to about 1970. Asbestos has been found on the planned route of a new connector street. Work began this week and is expected to take a month. Workers will keep the area wet and use fencing to prevent dust from getting airborne. NCDOT consultant Donald Griffith spoke at a community meeting Monday night.
With windbreaks and misting are insufficient for controlling any dust produced, operations will cease until conditions improve or additional measures are put in place to control it.
Workers will wear protective gear, including hazmat suits. Once contaminated soil is removed, DOT will begin work on the half-mile project. For WFAE News, I'm David Borax in Davidson.
You can learn more about the history of asbestos in Davidson in our project Asbestos Town at wfae.org/asbestostown. North Carolina Governor Josh Stein says the Department of Health and Human Services will restore provider rates to levels before Medicaid cuts were enacted in September. Despite the move, Stein said funding will run out this spring if the Republican-led General Assembly fails to pass a budget. At a news conference Wednesday in Raleigh, he said lawmakers' unrelated disputes have delayed progress.
All they had to do was their most basic and important job, pass a budget. Understand that only one state's legislature in this entire country has not enacted a budget. That's North Carolina's.
South Carolina SNAP recipients will no longer be allowed to use their benefits to buy candy, soft drinks, energy drinks, or other sweetened beverages. The change comes after the U.S. Department of Agriculture approved a waiver requested by Governor Henry McMaster. State officials say the goal is to encourage healthier food choices and address South Carolina's high obesity rates. About 36% of adults and more than a third of children in the state are considered obese, according to federal data. South Carolina is now one of several states granted federal permission to limit sugary purchases under SNAP. A new study finds that the coastal city of New Bern is at risk of losing most of its conserved wetlands due to climate change. Zachary Turner has more.
Researchers from UNC Chapel Hill found that 3 feet of sea level rise would destroy 60% of New Bern's conserved wetland areas. These wetlands reduce fish kills, improve water quality, and store carbon. Losing most of them might cost the town an estimated $50,000 per year. A study found that expanded conservation, restoration, and preservation policies could mitigate some of those losses. Sea level rise may exceed 3.5 feet by the end of the century, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a risk for coastal communities everywhere. Zachary Turner, WFAE News.
South Carolina health officials are reporting 27 new measles cases since Friday in an ongoing outbreak. WYFF reports the latest cases announced this week bring the total in the upstate outbreak to 111 and overall cases to 114 in the state for the year. The South Carolina Department of Public Health says 105 of the outbreak-related cases were unvaccinated. There are currently 254 people in quarantine. Much of the funding for low-income civil legal services has been frozen in North Carolina for 5 months, an unprecedented shift that has long-ranging consequences. WHQR's Kelly Knoyer has more.
NC Legal Aid serves the poorest people in North Carolina, providing them with legal representation in civil court when they couldn't otherwise afford it. Jonathan Perry was the managing attorney for Legal Aid's Boone office until it recently closed. He says their clients come to them in dire need.
So it could be somebody that's landlord's evicting them and they need representation in court. It could be a woman in Watauga County that is the victim of abuse or a sexual assault that is trying to get a restraining order against somebody.
But Legal Aid will not be able to help everyone who needs it in 2026. In fact, an estimated 8,000 fewer clients will get services thanks to a one-paragraph provision in this summer's Public Safety Act. It's meant some really tough decisions for Perry.
You know, I have to prioritize. Like, well, obviously, somebody going through an active DV, that's a priority right now with the staff that I have versus, like, some of the expungement clinics that we typically do or the will clinics that we do for free.
The one-year funding freeze came because legislators were concerned about the organization that helps fund legal aid, IOLTA, or Interest on Lawyers Trust Accounts. Here's how it works. Lawyers often need to hold on to a client's money while they work on a case. That money can generate interest, a lot of interest. The organization gave out $12 million in grants to organizations in 2025. And the organizations that got that money were under close scrutiny in a House Oversight Committee meeting in October. Here's Republican Chairman Harry Warren.
We've heard from a number of folks that IOLTA does good work, and we have seen evidence of that. But IOLTA has also gone somewhat rogue, awarding grants to leftist groups with leftist ideologies.
That is a concern, he says, because IOLTA is barred from putting money into advocacy organizations. Some of the grantees, Warren said, were defending migrants or had pro-diversity or social justice messaging on their websites. Others at the hearing were worried about the knock-on effects of the funding freeze. Here's Representative Mike Sheetzelt, a Republican from Wake County.
It is deeply, deeply unfortunate that we are in this situation right now. I share the concerns voiced by so many of my colleagues that access to justice is being impeded here.
According to Ashley Campbell, the director of NC Legal Aid, half of the money for the grants last year went to her organization, about $6 million. That's 15% of their budget.
And so we have had to announce we are closing 9 offices, primarily in rural communities. And we have laid off or vacated approximately 50 staff positions. And while that is devastating, the most significant impact to our state are the thousands of North Carolinians who are not going to be able to receive the civil legal help that they need.
8,000 fewer people receiving services. That number is hard to wrap your mind around, so Campbell shared the story of just one client, a victim of Hurricane Helene.
His house, you know, slid off the side of the mountain. His wife died, and he and his son survived. We helped them do a FEMA appeal and get their FEMA benefits. We helped them file for the wife's life insurance. He was having a difficult time doing that himself. And he still had a mortgage on his house. So he's still having to pay the bank for a house that does not exist.
NC Legal Aid negotiated with the bank to avoid a foreclosure going on his record. While the pause will end at the end of June, Campbell worries the freeze will mean no funding for IOLTA whatsoever for the entirety of 2026.
even if they allow them to begin making grants again, they have to go through a grant making process.
They've tried to fill the gap. And while other funders have come through, she says,
nobody can fill a $6.5 million hole, period. End of story.
While some members of the House and Senate have said they support legal aid, there's been no movement toward ending the freeze early. That means 2026 is looking to be a tough year for those in need of free legal help in North Carolina. In Wilmington, I'm Kelly Knoyer.
Time is running out for those still working at home since the pandemic. One of the changes that could be coming with the new year is a return to the office 5 days a week. That's according to recent data and a survey of business leaders. For more, Tony Macia of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter spoke with our Marshall Terry for our segment, Bizworthy.
So what does this data and that survey say exactly?
Yeah, Marshall, it's really a combination of factors. There was a survey of business leaders nationally in October. 13% indicated that they intended to have workers back in the office more days next year. Just 5% saying fewer. So that sort of indicates that this trend is continuing. And you've seen a number of companies in recent weeks ratchet up the number of days that workers are supposed to be in the office. Truist locally, they're going back 5 days a week starting in January, but there have been other national companies, Paramount, Instagram, NBC Universal, Microsoft, and others that are sort of moving back either to 5 days a week or toward 5 days a week.
Will there be enough desks to go around? I mean, didn't many businesses reconfigure and downsize workspace during the pandemic?
Well, that's a good question. The answer is yes. A lot, at least in Charlotte, have reconfigured those spaces, and they have hot desks, you know, where you don't have your own cubicle or your own office, but, you know, you sort of share them or jockey for them, you know, with coworkers. And so if they're going to be people back 5 days a week that are now back 3 days a week, they might need more desks. They might need more space. And so that is potentially a limiting factor.
It feels like we've been having this debate about remote, hybrid, work from home, return to the office for 5 years now. Do you think this coming year will mark some kind of conclusion?
Yeah, I mean, these debates have been going on for a while, even before COVID. Obviously, COVID really brought this issue into focus. But yeah, it's been going on for a while. I think it's going to continue to go on. I don't know that we solve it in 2026, but I would not be surprised to see more companies make 5 days a week the norm like it was really before COVID.
Let's switch over to some healthcare news now. Some Novant Health patients have noticed a new fee attached to the questionnaire you usually fill out before seeing a doctor. How much and what's behind this change? Is this their equivalent of airlines charging to pick your seat?
Yeah, some Novant Health patients have noticed that on their bills, they've started getting small charges for $8 or maybe $5, $10, somewhere in there for filling out health questionnaires when they go to the doctor, the kinds of things that say, you know, do you feel safe at home? Those kinds of health screening questions. Novant is now charging for those. They say most insurance companies do cover it. So whether it's like picking your seat on an airplane, I mean, there are a lot of businesses deal with this question of do we bundle the services or do we break them out individually? I mean, I think a lot of patients think this is something that ought to be included when you go to the doctor, filling out a written questionnaire. Novant and some other health systems around the country seem to be breaking this out. Some patients that we talked to said that they don't think it's really fair and that it would discourage people from filling out these questionnaires if they knew they had to essentially pay extra to disclose this information to their doctors.
Finally, after almost 60 years, Charlotte Magazine published its final issue this month. Why is it calling it a day?
Charlotte Magazine's parent company, Morris Communications, out of Georgia, let the staff there know a few weeks ago that December would be the final issue. They didn't give a lot of details on that. They said it was business reasons, financial reasons, that kind of thing. The Charlotte Ledger ran a piece last week by Charlotte Magazine's editor, Greg LeCour, that sort of looked at the magazine's legacy. He said that it was really a city magazine that held a mirror up to Charlotte, not just food coverage and lifestyle coverage, but also, you know, media, civic issues. And now there's no city magazine for Charlotte. So it's quite a loss.
All right, Tony, thank you.
Thanks, Marshall.
That's Tony Macia of the Charlotte Ledger Business Newsletter.
And for Thursday, December 11th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Teal.